Into the Nexus is a production of amove.tv. Bookmark Amove TV for other great video games and esports podcasts. Into the Nexus is sponsored by listeners like you via patreon.com/ITN. And welcome back, everybody. This is Into the Nexus, the podcast all about Heroes of the Storm. I'm Garrett, here as always with Kyle. But you're here today because we're being joined by a guest, a first-time guest on this here program. CCL English broadcast talent himself, Justing, is here.
Yep, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. It's been quite a while since I've done a podcast, and especially for HOTS, so it's cool.
Welcome to you.
Yeah, much requested. A lot of folks with the, can we get the Justing on there? Let's talk to Justing. Kyle's talked to him. Kyle does CCL interviews.
Now, to be fair, that was just yesterday. Wait, no. We back when you were in Wildheart, we did an interview about being a player.
Yeah, long time back.
That's a good jumping off point to just talk about. You have quite the history, not just with CCL, but just this game and competitive HOTS in general, because it's like we could probably talk for a while just about your journey through CCL from player to now broadcast talent. But you also played in HGC.
Yeah, I've pretty much played in almost everything with the exception of a couple LANs and the first BlizzCon. I remember me and Buds were just hanging out watching the first BlizzCon, and that was kind of when we decided that we wanted to play the game, take it super serious. Just seeing what Cloud9 did was real inspiring. So then we kind of just grinded it out.
It's been a while since I thought about the first championship. Was that 2014 or was that 2015?
I don't remember actually. I think it was 2015, because that was around the time that we made the amateur team.
That's a hell of a story. You were literally sitting there watching it just and turning to your buddy like, hey, we're going to do this next year. And you did.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, it's your first time on the show. So, you know, let's get your gaming resume in general. Like, was HOTS your first competitive game, or were you into other competitive atmospheres before that?
So I've pretty much grown up with PC gaming and Blizzard games in particular. Probably the first game I like played seriously for any period of time was Warcraft 3, but mostly just custom games. I played a lot of Warcraft 3 customs, just tower defenses and all the like hero arena games, pretty much everything besides Dota, which in hindsight might have been a bad move. The first time I tried to play a Dota game, I think I was like 12 years old or something, and got just super flamed because I didn't understand like anything that was going on, and that game was really not new player friendly.
That's my League of Legends experience.
Yeah, so I went from Warcraft 3 customs to playing a lot of World of Warcraft, and then I got into League of Legends really early when League of Legends came out, and I was really high ranked in like the first two seasons, but I kind of took a break and then didn't really play it too competitively. I was mostly just playing games with my friends in League, and then as soon as HOTS came out, I was just all over HOTS.
That's awesome. Kyle, were you aware that you had another custom game fan coming on the show? Is that the reason you booked Justing?
Well, I mean, it was mostly because I'm just mad impressed that every time you're mid-sentence, something gets drafted, and then you've already adapted the sentence that you were creating in your mind to include this new strategy. It's extremely impressive, frankly. You are able to, in these moving pieces... And that's the amazing thing about MOBAs is there's so many moving pieces. One character change plus a map can just drastically impact the game. And you've got all this kind of worked out.
Yeah, I've just spent a lot of time drafting and doing prep for draft. I think I would say pretty much without a doubt that I have more time spent on either drafting or draft prep than pretty much any other player in HOTS. It was just something that I found really interesting. It's like it almost plays like a card game where you're just countering the opponent and kind of, it feels like a 1v1. Like, it feels like it's its own game. And I just have a lot of time, a lot of fun kind of theory crafting things and trying to figure out what I think is the best way to play the map, as opposed to sort of just copying what other people are doing.
You said card game. Which card game?
I played a little bit of card games, but I couldn't like grind any card games. Like I'd play for a bit. I played Hearthstone a little bit, but not super competitively. And I've played some other smaller card games that haven't really made it that aren't really with us today. Because a lot of card games have kind of fallen off for sure. But yeah, Hots Draft is still my favorite card game, I guess.
So is that kind of a turn by turn back and forth exchange that you find so interesting as a player and now as an analysis for the CCL?
Yeah, it's been a good transition for sure. I mainly wanted to do it because it would be kind of an opportunity for me to grow more as a person. And I've loved HOTS since I started playing it. So being able to do something new within HOTS was really exciting to me, because I kind of felt like I'd grown about as much as I could as a player, and just doing something new just seemed like a good idea. And it's been fun so far.
Has it been tough making that transformation over to the behind the screen sort of place? Because you played this game a lot and you probably see some really cool drafts come together, and you have to be sitting there sometimes being like, oh, I wish I was, I would have been in there on that false start. I would have been in there in that.
Yeah. There's definitely been a lot of times where I wish I could like jump in and play, and at the beginning, I'd say the hardest part for me was just getting used to being on camera. And that for me was the biggest difference between playing the game and doing the analyst, was just like the pressure of knowing that you're just on camera in front of a ton of people is very different than the pressure of playing, especially at the start. And now I'm getting a little bit more used to it, but I know at the very beginning I felt like really like rigid and like uncomfortable. Like I had to be like perfectly still all the time because I was just so like nervous knowing that everyone's watching me. But it's gotten better for sure.
It's not fair. Frankly, it's not fair. In the past, well, I guess, you know, there's TV. If we go really in the past, of course, we would all been these like tiny little dots there in the Coliseum, you know, off in the distance. No one can really see. We're screaming at the top of our lungs, but we're making it work. And then TV comes about and the camera's not on you all the time, at least. Now we're in our own homes, no one around. Yeah, we have to worry about appearance. It ain't right. It ain't right. This is an audio program, by the way, and we're on camera. What happened?
We were pressured into it back during Wings of Liberty, doing a podcast about StarCraft. Like we just wanted to continue being troglodytes living in hoodies all day. And people were like, well, turn on your camera. And I was just like, I don't want to. And now I'm like getting old and I'm on camera. And I'm like, man, I'm going to start have to think about makeup soon. This is a pain.
That was a weird thing that I didn't really expect when I started doing the HGC stuff, is I didn't realize that everyone just got a bunch of makeup before you went out on stage and stuff. And before you took pictures, they had like the professional makeup artist do all that. And that was weird to me. It was,
oh man. Yeah.
It was just weird.
I've only been on one panel at BlizzCon that was broadcasted. So I've only been on one panel at BlizzCon that had like the backstage experience. And yeah, that was my first experience like getting back there, and I just showed up thinking, yeah, I'm good to go. I spent time on my hair this morning, I look good. And yeah, there's a makeup artist, and she walks up to me and sits me in front of like the what do you call it, it's like the little makeup station. It's literally what you see in movies. It's got the like the vanity lights, like the bulbs up around the mirror, and she looks at me and goes, so what do you want? And I'm just like, you're the professional, I'm just happy to be here. Like, I don't know. I've never done this before. Yeah, that was
It would be interesting to see, though, because like I feel like since we got into esports, there was just never not a makeup person. I know they say like the lights would drown you out and you'd look real pale up there. But aren't we pale inside anyway? Like, let's embrace this. Oh, also, I have, since you did all those pictures, I got a question I never got to ask this before. Do they ask players to put your fist behind your arms to make your biceps bigger? Because everyone takes that pose.
So they do like standard poses where everyone does the same one. And then you get to do like one unique one or fun one. It kind of depends. I think a lot just comes down to the whoever's directing it, whoever's filming for that. They kind of get to choose. But yeah, a lot of the time you get kind of coached through that, and they have you. Yeah, everyone has to stand there like looking stern with their arm with their arms crossed. And that's just, yeah, they do make you do that. And everyone did. It was like kind of hard to keep a straight face a lot of the time. That's why I feel like in mine, a lot of the time I'm almost just like smirking because I couldn't like keep a serious face while doing it, because it's just so weird to me having the being directed to do these certain poses and stuff, and it's all super serious, and I just like couldn't take it seriously.
Yeah. Oh man, some people are getting out the finger guns, you know. Some people get really into it, and I'm sad we didn't HGC wasn't around long enough to enter the hollow sphere that, you know, football is really kind of entered, where you all would kind of like come up in the bottom corners and kind of stand there and maybe slowly rotate you on some sort of disc, which is probably just like a sledding disc that someone.
Are you talking about like the green screen, like lower thirds that they do for the NFL, or the
players show up?
Those things are ridiculous.
I love them. It's the part I get most excited about because I don't understand the rest.
All right, so get a really big Lazy Susan next season in the CCL. We're just gonna spin the players in front of a green screen, and we're gonna add that to the lower third.
You got to do the and then go really slow for a moment. I want to see Baja going. I want to see you going. I just want to see everybody spinning.
All the casting talent just Grubby, Bahamut, and Justine just
spin them around.
Like you're sort of stuff. Like you're waiting for a long quick match cue.
That reminds me of my first interview I ever did as a player was, I think it was in Sweden on stage. I'd never done like a full body player interview. And we had these like fun spinny chairs and I didn't know any better. And I was really nervous and we just finished playing. And the whole time I watched it back, I'm just spinning back and forth. Like it was the most embarrassing thing for me to watch back, because like no one made me stop. Like I just kept going. I was just having a good time on the chair, like completely oblivious to how it looked on broadcast.
You're comfortable, man. You're in the zone.
Yeah, I was chilling, but it looked so bad in hindsight. I watched it back and it was so hard to watch.
That's the hard part about this. I feel like every once in a while I need to check in and listen to my own stuff, just see if I'm doing anything that I think is horrible. I hate it. It's so cringy. I can't stand listening to myself.
I think I do okay. The one thing that really bothers me is that when I DDR, my hands do like they're contorting the whole time, like the most bizarre. The rest of me is like looking pretty cool.
Did you say my DDR hands, like Dance Dance Revolution?
Yeah, like Dance Dance Revolution. Okay. Yeah.
I just want to make sure I'm on the right page.
Yeah, no, I got pretty decent in the past, but no matter what I did, my hands were just like convulsing.
I just didn't know what to do with your hands.
What am I supposed to do? And I don't grab the back bar. All right, like that's cheating. Anyone who grabs the back bar during DDR is cheating.
I used to play in bands, and I make really dumb faces when I play guitar.
Okay, just, that's pretty common.
Yeah, it's just something you do. I don't know. Hadn't really thought about it till now. So do you think about it much now, Justin, or does it just kind of feel natural being on air? And
It's definitely still a little bit unnatural for me. It's not as natural as playing is, just because I've done that so much more. Like, the pressure of playing on stage for whatever reason didn't really bother me. Whereas just turning my webcam on to stream bothers me a little bit. So I don't really know what the difference is. I think it's just more of a social thing versus like a technical thing where I'm a little bit more comfortable. But yeah, it's definitely getting better for sure. I'm nowhere near, like, it's not even close to when I first started. The first day I was probably like almost shaking, could like hardly breathe from how nervous I was at the start.
It's like I've had to do, like, I do graphic design and art stuff, and I've had to do demos before, and I never really thought about it. It's the kind of thing, like, when I'm in there, like, working on my own stuff and getting work done for clients, I don't think about it at all. And the second you stop me and ask me to explain what I'm doing, or, like, interact while doing it, it takes about three times as long as it would be if I was just left to my own devices. But also the first few times I did that, it was just like, wait, what am I have to verbalize like the decisions I'm making and why I'm making them. Like, that's just weird, as opposed to, you know, being in the zone and just getting the job done. So I bet it's a little something like that too.
Yeah, it's just knowing people are watching. Just, oh, it makes everything a little bit weird because you have to be like a little bit more conscious about everything, like your movements and stuff, especially after watching my that one interview where I was spinning in circles. Like I was just consciously aware of it after that. Like, don't do that. And I'm doing better than before, at least.
Yeah, I used to scratch my nose a lot more than I currently do. Just like, stop that. I need to stop that. But well, that's interesting. So like, what was it like in the early stages, kind of going from playing to being broadcast talent?
So it was definitely a difficult decision to make because I do love playing. And I'd say at the beginning, my biggest thing that I was feeling was that I wanted to play. Like, just watching how much fun everybody was having was like, and seeing at the very start of the season, teams were a lot weaker than they are by the end now. So it kind of made me want to just jump in there and fix everything. Cause like before doing the analyst thing, I'd done some coaching. So my initial notes that I was taking were just like every mistake that the teams were making. And I was like, wait a second, that's not right. Like, cause that's just like the mode I was in. Typically when I'd take notes on watching games, it would be, you know, to fix the problems for coaching. So I just wanted to play. And then it took me a little bit to get into the analyst mindset that I'm highlighting the winning team more so than pointing out the critical mistakes that led to the losing team losing.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't think of that hurdle. Yeah, because I've watched all the broadcasts and I can't see that evolution from you. Yeah, because I remember you talking about where someone maybe misstep or step too far up and those kind of waned off. I mean, you also have Twitch chat there who is giving their own analysis of, you know, what's going wrong. And oftentimes that level one talent, and you're like, that's the one that everyone goes. It's literally the only yeah. level one. What are they going on about?
Yeah, there have been. That is the one thing that I still like to be critical of is the talent choices, because that's such an easy thing to fix. That's not like a mechanical mistake. Because that's the same as in coaching. Like if someone makes a mechanical mistake, it's whatever. Like you can't, like, what are you going to tell them? Like push your buttons better, like use your mouse a little bit better. Like there's really no fixing that. But things like talents, I feel there's a lot less of an excuse for that. It's just kind of being aware of win conditions and stuff.
But let's ride this for a hot moment. What are Justing's top three? You can go over three. Most mispicked talents.
So I'd say right now, I mean, my primary focus is on tank talents because that's the thing that I'm most familiar with, that I've experimented with the most. I'd say I don't see enough devils do, and I see too much spell shield when the enemy doesn't even have really any spell damage, just out of habit, because the spell shield does get the cooldown reduction if you go the fire W build on Diablo, which is pretty meta right now, which so that makes sense. But when you're against two auto attack based damage and you're still going the spell shield and they have almost no spell damage at all and they maybe have percent damage with a Tychus or something, it just feels so wrong to do that. And I think they're just doing that out of habit. So I'd say the spell shield level one on Diablo. Another one I would say is the seven talents on Muradin, or no, actually the four talent on Muradin. I was seeing every Muradin take the double W at level four, where it does the little AoE under his feet a second time. But the only reason anyone ever used to take that talent was because you had the 13 with the healing static so that it would proc twice and you'd get more healing. And I'd see people take it every single game, even when it was double auto attackers on the enemy team, where you could take reverb and just cut their damage in half. And they all go fire at 13, so there's really, I can't comprehend why they take it. It does like 75 damage or something. It's just, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And then the third one, I guess, would be Hogger builds. Pretty much everyone goes the same build, but I've done a lot of experimenting with the W quest level one, where you get the infinite stacking. And I think that you can go a completely different play style on objective based maps. They all take the passive at level one and four on Hogger, but I really think that you can get away with a stacking build with the W level one and then take the Hortipult level 20, where if you're on Infernal Shrines or something, the level 20 Hortipole is just disgusting, where it throws meat everywhere, or it throws meat everywhere and it throws bombs everywhere. And if you combo that with a level one, you get the healing every time a bomb hits. So you're pretty much just invincible on something like a shrine, and it lasts for 20 seconds. So it's kind of weird to me that I haven't seen any build diversity at all for Hogger.
Oh, yeah. So this, the journeyman's cooking. I didn't think about the secret stash throwing bombs. 100% win rate, one game played in the CCL. Can we talk about Hogger for a hot moment? This win rate is atrocious at 32%. Is there a dream, like the Hogger player just sees camps being taken and they said, I did my part, and then moves on and then doesn't really think about the game as a whole? Like, it's shocking.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is that his play style is very different from the other offlaners. He's a lot more aggressive and he's a lot easier to kill than the other offlaners. The other ones are all so tanky. Besides Hogger, Hogger's kind of tankiness comes through just his CC and using his abilities well. And also, we have seen a lot of Hortipole ints where people just dive super far into the back line and just get deleted. And same with the level 20 with the, I think it's the no control at level 20, where you latch on and just start spinning around. I've seen a lot of Hoggers just kind of press that and immediately die. So I think it's just because he has like a really risky play style. So if you're losing, it's kind of rough to be a Hogger.
That's fair.
Haven't seen it much in home games, but certainly got a lot of my personal Hogger kills when no control hit the board. It's just like, oh, they're just gonna keep going. Okay, everyone target the Hogger. That's interesting. Do you play a lot of like games at home? Like, do you do pickup games? Do you do Storm League? Do you do Quick Match? Like, I can't help but, you mentioned Diablo, and I think we even heard Grubby do a bit of a lecture. Makes it sound so boring, but he made a point about how kind of invaluable Feast on Fear can be, and that is a really popular talent in our games at home.
Yeah, it is weird. I think Devil's Due is almost always the best choice for Diablo at level one. I think you pretty much either go Devil's Due or Spell Shield. The Devil's Due, the main thing with it, some people think it's kind of like a meme talent, but if you get your team to prioritize playing for the globes and you actually make a constant effort to do that, and you always make a constant effort to only fight when you have a pre-tap, I think it's the strongest level one by far. You get like three health bars. You just pre-tap, and like my comms when I was playing Diablo, I would pre-tap and I'd be like, all right, I'm invincible. I'm just running at them. Like, do whatever you want. Like, I'm invincible for the next like 20 seconds. So have fun, team. And I don't think any other level one talent makes you able to do that.
Doesn't Feast on Fear also have a issue where it replaces its own healing? It doesn't stack, right? So if I were to charge, pick up charge, I'm just resetting 10% healing.
Yeah, so that kind of incentivizes the awkward Diablo combo where he stuns him into the wall and then kind of looks at him for a second before he flips him, because you want to maximize that healing. That's like, people who don't play Diablo, that's the thing they hate the most, is when they're trying to follow up and the Diablo stuns and doesn't immediately flip, so you miss your Li-Ming combo or something. And yeah, it does kind of incentivize that because the heal doesn't stack.
Interesting. Thanks for sharing that. How are you feeling about the kind of new Johanna meta we have found ourselves in? Because that has trickled into the game at home. Like, people are going Falling Sword, which I was surprised. I thought it was going to take a lot longer for us to adopt that in pickup games.
Yeah, so Falling Sword, I think, has always sort of worked better with Johanna's playstyle and the rest of her kit. So everyone used to pretty much take Blessed Shield, but it was really evident. I mean, like back in like the HGC days when Johanna was pretty popular, people would typically take Blessed Shield and one shot the enemy frontline with it. So the idea was just that she could use her Unstoppable on her D to just be invincible, and then against the enemy tank, like not be able to get one shot by the enemy tank, and then just wait for her moment to Blessed Shield and your whole team just combos the tank and kills it. Whereas people were picking Blessed Shield back then, even when they couldn't do that, and it was really evident that they didn't understand why that wasn't working. So in my opinion, Blessed Shield's only for one-shotting the enemy tank, pretty much, with the exception of maybe you're playing against like a Tracer or something that you need to lock down. And people would pick it every single game, even though I think the play style of balling sorting into the back line and then pulling them all together and then slowing them all just does more. I think it just synergizes better with her kit, with her condemn, and with her Q. Because otherwise, there's really no way to get into the back line. But if you just jump on their back line and set up your own combo, it's super strong. But Johanna now is very different from Johanna before. Her 20 for Falling Sword is really good. And I think she's the most broken hero in the game right now, by far. I think if you lose with her in a competitive setting, that your team had to have made major mistakes. And I just don't think she should ever be let through the draft. I think she's just way too strong.
Writing that thought and the current overpowered heroes, at least in the public mindset, there was a lot of Rengar that just got through this past weekend. Was that all just personal snipes because the teams knew each other so well at this point? Or is Rengar not actually that big of a deal?
He's really strong, but the issue with prioritizing him is that you're either giving up the Johanna if you don't ban it, or you're giving up, you're basically trading Rengar for Lucio and Stukov, which I think are just about as strong as Rengar is, even after all the buffs. So it just feels really bad to first pick Rengar and leave Stukov and Lucio up, because then you're kind of just trading good healers, and it doesn't feel like you got a really huge advantage. Because the supports are just really, really strong right now, and so are the offlaners, which is part of why Johanna is good, because she's a flex pick. But just the offlaners and the supports have been kind of incrementally buffed recently, so they just feel kind of ridiculous. It feels like you can't really get banned out of having a really strong healer.
Interesting thoughts. I always look at that and think it is because of how well the teams know each other. I look at that. I'm like, well, if it's powerful, it might be a powerful hero in home games, but probably not worth letting a like a main pick for someone else through in a lot of scenarios. But yeah,
his totem build is really strong. I'd say him and Stukov are probably the best supports, but I'd say that they're close enough in skill level that unless there's nothing else up that you want, then picking the Rengar makes sense. The totem build is really, really strong, though, for sure. He's a whole different beast from what he was before. He was nearly unplayable before, and now he's probably the best support in the game. So big changes for him.
So what about the season brought Anduin into that fold of early pick powerful healers?
So Anduin did receive some buffs, but he didn't get immediately prioritized after that. It kind of took a while for people to play with him more. The main thing I'd say is Anduin synergizes really well with a lot of the current meta heroes. Like for Vala, if you're going to pick a Vala, you would rather have an Anduin as your healer than a Lucio or a Stukov, just because he's more reliable at saving her with his pull and having that consistent single target healing with his Q. So a lot of it is just because of what other things are strong in the meta right now. And he did get the little buffs, but I don't think that's the main thing. Being able to stop the enemy team from one-shotting your tank with the pull is really strong, especially because it's kind of a focus the tank meta. And yeah, I would say that's the main thing. And also things like stitches just work really well with him. There's a lot of ways to deliver the light bomb as well with meta heroes like Johanna. You have the Hortipult from Hogger. There's just a lot of things that Anduin synergizes pretty well with right now.
It is easy to do. That is very true. And I thought it was really interesting that they really grabbed on to Censure, I think is how you say it. The level 20 talent that gives a light stun. Well, actually, it's 0.75 seconds stun to Chastise.
That's decent. That's a good length on a stun.
Yeah, that works really well with the 4 talent, too. If you take the one that lets it hit two heroes, that makes Anduin CC a lot scarier. Also, that's the one CC that I don't know if it's just because I wasn't playing the game a ton when he got released, because he's one of the more recent heroes, but I almost always get hit by that. Like, I don't even see it. It's just this tiny little slightly glowing orb he throws at you, and it's hard to even see it.
It's slow, and it's there's always that feeling of it won't go that far. This is going to be fine.
It's been a long time since I've been like surprised by like a Kael'thas gravity lapse, but yeah, I still get surprised by Anduin for some reason, but it's just another slow moving thing. I don't know. I think Anduin players out there, like even you know, people, you know, just playing in Quick Match and Storm League, like they've just gotten good. They know they use the environment, they use the terrain, they know what corners are going to be going around, and that's where they're putting those things. And it's insidious. Good job, Anduin players.
It also looks like a heal, so you kind of want to walk into it on instinct.
That's true. That's, I never really thought about that, but you're right. They don't look, Anduin's abilities do not look menacing, like, or they don't look unfriendly even when he's on the opposing team. It still just looks like, oh yeah, it's time to go get a heal. Although I guess you could say the same of other, like I'll going all the way back to like Uther being in the meta. Like he's got a line attack too that's just like, oh, it looks like a heal, but it, you know, hurts. It doesn't hold you in place though. So it's interesting stuff. Well, that's rad. Well, but before, you know, before we, I want to get your thoughts on some other stuff too. We got it. We're not getting out of here without at least mentioning Microsoft. But before we move on topics, we do want to thank our patrons who are supporting this program over at patreon.com/ITN. So if you're out there, you're listening to Kyle and myself and the wonderful guests we choose to come on the program week in and week out, check out patreon.com/ITN. It's the best way to support us. And we do pay our guests for our time, and it's because of the support over on the Patreon. So thank you very much, everybody. And we've got some new patrons to thank this week, which is very exciting, especially coming out of the holidays. Usually see a downturn, but Gregory Lopes and Metter, thank you very much for signing up and becoming a patron. We got some perks for you. If you go to patreon.com/ITN and sign up, you're going to get access to our Discord. You can also join us for our monthly game nights, which we are doing one next week. It'll be post my birthday, Kyle. I will probably have an extra adult beverage.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, then maybe we can do that Zeratul light bomb we did last time.
Yeah. Hey, dude, whatever I don't have to think too hard, you know.
You don't have to think too hard about that. No, it's pretty easy.
Sounds all right. So, yeah. Kyle, I believe an update. You have an update for everyone listening who wanted to know what was going on with you and NGS this season.
Yes, we did register. We did it. We filed our paperwork in time and it's all set. So, and I'm actually going to be support player for that. I'm really, really excited about that. I get to play heals. I've been down the tank road, assassin road for Storm League, but you know, I solo lane for like 2 years now. I'm just really excited for the mix up, really excited for it. So we'll be talking about that going forward. This is more of like a housekeeping, the upcoming content, as it were. We're going to continue to talk about CCL here, of course, for the rest of our show and talk to our fine guests. But we want to let everybody know too that next week we're going to do an in-depth look at the Microsoft acquisition. News is still coming out every single day about that. Well, it's been 2 days, but every hour, basically, there's some new thought about it, something coming to light. Previous thoughts, how long this has been going on for, it's all still leaking out. So we will talk about that next week.
Yeah, we'll be going in depth. However, just how are we all feeling? We're all Blizzard fans. We've all been through some shit the last year or two, you know, looking at the company that makes the games we love and finding out a lot of things about it. And now we're learning that it's being acquired by a freaking juggernaut in the form of Microsoft. Like, Kyle, I'll throw to you. Or sorry, go ahead, Justin. How are you feeling about this?
I can't imagine that it will be a bad thing. It's certainly possible that, you know, Bill Gates could come shut everything down, but I'm not really expecting it to be a bad thing. I think everyone would probably mostly agree that the Blizzard Activision, the issue has been much less Blizzard. So I think it seems that a lot of the issues, at least from my perspective, playing in HOTS and kind of trying to give my criticism before HGC was canceled, that, because to me, it seemed like there was some writing on the wall that, you know, things were not really being done properly, and that kind of aided in the downfall of HGC. And I think a lot of that stems from like the management of Activision and kind of that, the expectations that they put on the teams at Blizzard. So because I think they have, I mean, Blizzard obviously has just incredible IPs. They have, you know, World of Warcraft, StarCraft. They have, I mean, Diablo, they have all these like crazy huge just intellectual properties. They have really good content, but I think a lot of it is just because of that direction forced on them from, you know, the upper management. So I'm hoping that Microsoft is going to give them a little bit more leniency, because they're not really going to be relying purely on Blizzard to pump out numbers, because it's going to be part of a big array of games that maybe their expectations won't be quite so high at first, at least. And maybe we'll see some better management stuff coming in, because they won't need to extract a certain amount of money from, you know, any Blizzard games in particular, because it's part of a bigger kind of array of games.
Yeah, that's certainly the big positive I've seen across the internet, is people just saying the amount of money that Microsoft has will allow Blizzard to slow down. Not that they're moving fast, it's more so it'll give them the breathing room they once had before investors and that sort of upper pressure caused them to chase every tail that, you know, came their way, every dragon they may have seen, every idea that kind of came in. Loot boxes now, wait, no, loot. And we're hearing even more. There's a story today about that old Bobby Kotick was demanding the Overwatch team go on these financial journeys and come up with this idea to only cancel it 2 weeks later. And then they go, well, okay, all right, well, back to Overwatch 2. And then he came out and said, well, the reason why we even sold was because Overwatch was so delayed. It's messy. It's messy.
What a brave man. What? I'm really glad that he was brave enough to come out and take no responsibility at all.
The idea of like just having to punch your employees one more time after the sale is just insane. But
did you see the thing that said he was trying to buy sites like Kotaku so that he could make them report positively on Activision Blizzard? Like, what an absolute, you're like James Bond villain levels of douchebaggery. Like, this is hysterical.
It's like the Jeff Bezos meme. I saw the same thing with the Wall Street Journal, where it's like Jeff Bezos acquires Wall Street Journal. And it's like, opinion, Jeff Bezos is actually a pretty cool guy. It's like,
I think was it Washington Journal, Washington Post? I forget which one.
But I don't remember. I hope I didn't slander them. Post, I don't remember which one.
Yeah. No, it's just been, dude, like, just buy another yacht and stop talking publicly, please. Just go away. Which eventually he will. Go away.
I find it interesting just how many franchises and fandoms have come out of the woodwork, because we, of course, here at Heroes care about Heroes. We're like, all right, you know, chances are higher. You know, they're better. Like the baseline, they've improved. But there's also like a Guitar Hero over here, like, yeah, all right, do it. And then the Prototype fans are like, woo, Prototype 3. And I'm one of those. So, you know,
well, even within Blizzard, like everyone, like probably my favorite. There were so many memes to enjoy, for sure. There were so many memes. And I will mention the big one for Heroes of the Storm. Yes, I am here for a Master Chief to be added to Heroes of the Storm, please. Or at least a Raynor skin. I'll take that. But one of my favorite ones that come out was with that image that they put out to along with the announcement that showed all the franchises. My favorite thing was everyone just clowning on, oh my God, they remembered StarCraft exists.
Yeah, picture.
No, but they do not, to my knowledge, they do not have a MOBA franchise, which is kind of exciting. A StarCraft, of course, is in a little bit more of the limelight because they did over at Microsoft Age of Empires recently. So they at least somebody over there believes in RTS.
Yeah, and it's the same team, essentially. It's all part of the Classics division, so there's that as well. I also follow Hearthstone, and we were clowning big time because we're like, why did they leave Hearthstone off? We're pretty sure that's the only Blizzard game pulling in money right now. So yeah, it's a little weird. Some people are like, well, there's Warcraft and Hearthstone's part of that. I'm like, yeah, that's a World of Warcraft logo. It's pretty specific. So I don't know. It's a little weird, but yeah, I share both of your thoughts. Where to me, it's a net positive. There's still just so many unknowns, but Kyle, I'm so glad you pointed out, like, everyone else that's like coming out of woodwork, like, oh my God, please, Activision's been keeping my favorite franchises just in a locker and doing nothing with it. Could you please? It reminds me of, for me, like as a Star Wars fan, it's like when Lucasfilm got acquired, I'm like, oh cool, we might actually like get more Star Wars now, because we kind of only had like 6 movies and kind of called it quits. So it's just like, I'd like a little bit more from the franchises that I enjoy.
Well, that was what, $4 billion for all of Star Wars? And this was $70 billion?
Yes. Marvel was also $4 billion, if you can believe that. Disney acquired Marvel for $4 billion. They acquired Lucas for $4 billion. And this was just shy of a meme-worthy $69 billion.
That's wild. Yeah. Because, I mean, Blizzard does have crazy IPs like World of Warcraft and all these things that can't really be replaced, but... That is pretty nuts to think that it's like 15 times more valuable than all the superheroes. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, it is wild for sure. So as someone who covers Blizzard games, like, this is very exciting. I mean, this is going to be a lot to chew on. I'm anxious to see where it goes. And I'm hopeful that it's just a positive shift in the wind overall. It already feels that way a little bit. So anyways, speaking of positivity and awesome stuff, the CCL Grand Finals are this coming weekend. And we would be remiss if we didn't talk about it with you, Justin, seeing as you're on the program today.
Yeah, I think the story of kind of the whole season is 30K versus everyone. And the grand finals is going to be no different because 30K is locked in. So the big question is going to be who they're up against, if it's either Simplicity or Wildheart.
Can you be impartial?
Yeah. I mean, just from watching the games, I'm expecting Wildheart to come out ahead, but that's not like a bold claim because Wildheart did 3-1 them earlier in the gauntlet. So. That's my expectation, though. I think we'll probably see a 30K Wildheart finals, but a lot is just going to come down to who shows up on the day, I think, between Simplicity and Wildheart.
In your past as a competitor, have you ever been in that position, though, where you were on the back foot and kind of getting not your clock clean, but, you know, taking an L? Like, is there a chance where it, like, drives them more? They get hungrier because they already lost Wildheart once?
Yeah, we had a similar situation to that before getting reverse swept by Team Freedom trying to go to the last BlizzCon 2018, where we played against them in the regular season at the end for placement, and I think we 3-0'd them, and we kind of showed a lot of stuff the first time, so that was kind of regretful to have to show so much to beat them. So we might see a similar situation with Wildheart and Simplicity, where if Wildheart showed everything that they had just to win that series, it might come back to bite them if Simplicity is able to kind of take that and study it.
I have heard that they've been going like 8 hours this week, like every night. Those players,
Simplicity?
All of them, like all the teams,
all of them,
just training like nuts. Yeah, because often one thing we sort of hear, you know, is it's a tournament. These are tournament players. You know, let's not get too esports professional on everybody. They've gone nuts. Like, every single team is training out of their minds for this grand final.
Yeah, that was what we unfortunately had to go up against in season one, where we were kind of owning and we were feeling pretty good about ourselves. And then we took like 2 weeks off for the holiday break. And we came back and we found out that Simplicity was just going hard for like 2 weeks straight, just scrimming every day. And we're like, oh, God, like, that's not the same team that we thought we were going to be going against. And yeah, they really powered up. So that it's not a huge surprise, I guess, because it does seem that that's kind of what happens in CCL is at the start, everyone's like, let's just have fun. And then at the end, once it gets close to the finals, it's like, all right, we need to scrim this many hours a day, this many times a week. Like, we're going to get a sub for you because you're not going to be able to be here Thursday. And it's like super serious, like nonstop grind at the very end. And I mean, that makes sense because that's where like the stakes are highest. But and it does make for an exciting season, too, because that means that you have teams just very practiced going into the finals and semifinals.
I was really impressed with 30K, though. I mean, they came back after almost a month break and still managed to look really good into Storm Esports after Storm Esports did like the whole gauntlet. And they 3-0'd Chilly Mountain, 3-1'd Oxygen, 3-0'd Diamond Hands, and 30K didn't look rusty.
Yeah, 30k is super scary. I think they do kind of look like they're just above everybody else right now overall with their coordination and sort of their macro is really clean. Like they play just extremely well. They understand how to like trade objectives and how to play to their win conditions. They just look really, really nuts. So it's going to take quite a bit of practice, I think, for either Simplicity or Wildheart if they do want to beat them. And something that makes it even more impressive is the fact that they're all playing with ping, with the exception of Liam, I think. They're all playing with ping. So we don't talk about that because it's like, I mean, it's not really good to like talk about that. You don't want to blame any games on ping, especially when you have a, you know, cross-region league. But like I looked back at our scrim record against Tempo Storm from back in the day, and both teams had like a near 100% win rate if we were playing on either Central or West, because they're all West and we were all Central. So it really does make a big difference at the highest level. So to see 30K come out and just look so dominant, even with them all playing on an even bigger ping difference than we were in NA at the time, is really impressive. And that just makes me even scarier, I think.
Yes, yeah. That's wild. Because, I mean, back in the HGC days, they would bring out, like, private servers to the events. Like, and there were so many damn times where, like, it was evident because they were playing on the previous patch. I was always grumpy, yeah, too, because I was like, no, I want to watch esports. I want to see the game that I'm playing at home. I want to take notes and bring it into my games.
Yeah, the playing at LAN was so much fun. And that was where there is no ping difference, so you could really determine for sure who the better team was. So that was fun. I loved the LANs, but in practice, it was actually like we were just trading wins on our respective servers in scrims.
One of the craziest things that 30K does that I love seeing, Twitch chat also, I love watching them because they get so confused. They understand what they drafted in terms of macro and their lane clear and how they're going to do camps. And it sometimes means like, Diablo ends up solo lane for the first 10 minutes of the game. And chat's like, whoa, no, they don't know how to play. While they're coordinating, actually moving around two assassins who have no body to actually hang out and get XP globes to deal with the camps and then trade off with Diablo eventually. It's a dance and it's really impressive.
Yeah, they're just nuts across the board. They're so strong. They understand their windows better than everyone else. Like they set up windows of opportunity for themselves too, just on the map, and they pretty much only take fights when they have advantages. So even if they lose a fight, they're still kind of just winning everywhere. So it is really impressive how they kind of prep everything for everything that they do.
I'm lost in thought thinking about how it'd be pretty damn hard to even if we could make server like private servers work. Like LANs are not a modern thing right now. Just be difficult to pull off.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate time in the world for LANs at the moment.
Yeah, I'm feeling very wistful about it.
So. Well, Microsoft did acquire MLG, so we'll see what happens.
Oh, you're right. They're, oh, God. Oh, goodness gracious me. All right, so hold up. Microsoft needs to now acquire Razer so that they can produce more of those masks. And you hand them out at all the lands, and there you go. You bring lands back because you control mask production. And it has LEDs in it because it's a Razer mask. So, you know, it goes
with I haven't seen that. Is it a like gamer exclusive?
Yeah, Razer makes it looks cyberpunk as hell. The two filters have ring LEDs built into them. Like, Yeah, it's exactly what you think a Razer mask would look like.
Yeah,
looks like Mass Effect DLC. Okay,
that's a good way to put it. That's a good way to put it. Well, Rad, I'm curious, like behind the scenes, what does prep look like for you for going into the finals? Do you like are you like an old school? Do you like old school like notepad? Like what is your prep for getting ready to work the casting desk?
So far, I've been kind of surprised with my ability to recall previous games without, I think it confuses me more to take notes a lot of the time. I take notes during every game just so that I make sure that I have kind of the talking points that I want after the game kind of laid out. And I sort of just keep track of like a progression of what's happening in the game. So usually I make like a column on a spreadsheet and I sort of color code it with which team got the objectives so that I can clearly see like the team got three objectives in a row or something. And then after that, it's, I'd put like they got the first objective because Murden died and they got up for it or something like that. But for the overall like season stuff, a lot of it is just from memory. I don't think I have like a photographic memory, but I definitely I can recall, like if someone like brings a game up, I can pretty much recall like the specifics of that game, even from like 5 years ago. Like I'll remember like being in a certain situation, like on a map doing a thing. Like there, like I remember there pretty much any like any standout moment I'll usually remember. So I think I've done a pretty good job of just off the top just recalling specifically like who beat what team in what week and stuff like that. It's just, I don't know, it's just a repetition, I think, just playing so many games. And in competitive, you really have to learn from all your mistakes and all your triumphs. So it's kind of just ingrained in me to remember those big moments.
That's awesome. That's like encyclopedic memory.
Yeah, I don't, it seems to only apply to HOTS, so, or any game that I play all the time, I guess, but...
That's fair. I have 90s jingles, so, you know, we'll cover all the bases eventually.
Yep. Yeah, you want a Corn Pops commercial from the 90s? I got you. Well, we're going to do, we got some questions from our listeners. This either came from our Discord or itncast@gmail.com. We're even getting some questions in chat, and I'll do my best, chat, to keep an eye over there and pull in questions if we've got a little extra time here. But we're starting us off. De La Soak wrote in and says, very important question. My girlfriend and I love whenever your cat wants up on your shoulder. When we see you cracking a smile during CCL and then your cat gets lifted up shortly after, is that a slight smile because the cat is batting at you and asking for pets?
Yeah, usually. So she, when the green screen's up, she doesn't have her normal avenue of getting onto my desk. Now what she likes to do, so if the green screen is down, she'll literally just come from my bed that's behind me and she'll jump up onto my shoulder. Like she'll like jump up onto the chair and then she'll just have her paws up here and she'll just like, I'll have to convert her into a holding position from above me. But in when the green screen is blocking her, her favorite mode of entrance, she usually just hops up on my desk and is sitting like right on my mouse pad. And she just like looks at me. She like pushes her nose at me and like looks at me like weird. She like turns her head and stuff and like gives me these weird looks, so I know that she's trying to get picked up. And that's, yeah, that is when I'm usually like smirking, because I mean it's cute seeing her hop up here.
My cat Dexter, he'll just start squawking the song of his people at me like no warning. Just walks over and just starts going at it. Back when he was a kitten and I was playing, you know, this was back in like Heart of the Swarm days, he would jump up and smack the crap out of my monitor trying to catch the cursor.
No, my cats have never done that. They're, I don't know. I tried getting Springy to watch a cat video on an iPad, and I decided after like seeing how she reacted to that might be kind of bullying, because she's like trying to catch the things, but they're not actually there. And I'm like, I don't know what this is doing to my cat's brain. I'm gonna take this away. Like it sounded cute at first, and then I felt bad. She's like scratching at it, scratching under it, trying to like find the bugs. Yeah.
Kyle, Karth is making it through the whole episode, right? He's in the room with you.
Oh yeah, no. He's never on camera though, because he sits in this really old rickety chair on a pair of jeans. Like there has to be an old pair of jeans in this very ugly old chair for my cat to take a nap. So he's currently enjoying what is off screen and always off screen.
Nice. I demand a photo at some point.
Okay. You can see the old IKEA chair, weathered and worn, torn and bruised, and the pair of jeans covered in fluff.
Sounds good. Sounds like a good time. I've got a seat to my right for the racing sim rig, and it's just covered in cat hair. Just absolutely covered. A lot of naps are taken over there. All right. Tiger Skippy wrote in, says, for Justing, I want to say it's been so awesome to see my favorite player since the Roll 20 days become my favorite caster as well. Now that you're out, who do you think is the most interesting team to watch draft and shift the meta? Also want to know what tanks do you think we undervalue?
So... Diamond Hands got knocked out, but they're probably the team that did the most innovative draft things. Now it's 30K plays pretty much the same style always, and it's super standard. So I don't think they're really innovating too much in draft. They're kind of just, they've nailed down though, you know, what works and what's strong right now. Wildheart is probably the team that still has the most interesting drafts going into the playoffs. They do a lot of combo-based stuff where it feels like other teams can't really, like, aren't capable of running that type of style. So it is cool to see them do that. They run a lot of the Stitches comps and these other things that are just really combo-oriented and somewhat unique. They have, I would say, the most defined style as a team. Storm had a style as well where they would typically run these really death ball-y comps where they're just all on the same page just by all going forward and fight, fight, fight. But it did feel like that kind of got countered by Simplicity. I think they figured it out. And Wildheart, I think, is a little bit more adaptive than that. For the tanks, I think Muradin is the best tank in the game, but almost nobody goes the build that I think is best. The jump slow at 7 and the... I mean, yeah, pretty much just the jump slow at 7. And I think Haymaker is not a troll ultimate. We saw Lauber take it and get a lot of value with it against the Medivh. I think if you don't need the avatar, then Haymaker is just insane. I've been a bit of a Muradin one trick right now in Storm League. When I really want to win, I just play Muradin, and I'm pretty much always just going Haymaker because it just feels like it gets way more value. I think you can do more with it. And I think if you're playing intelligently, usually if you're going to get one shot as Muradin, you're not even going to have time to get your avatar off anyways. So I'd say Muradin is the most underrated right now.
Do you have quick tips for players at home as to how to Haymaker effectively?
So you pretty much are always comboing with your jump, but if you're playing Muradin properly, you need to be kind of constantly playing out of fog. You're sort of just permanently pressuring the enemy team on their flank, because if you're playing within a safe distance, you're pretty much like just close enough to be able to jump in and start and engage, and just far enough away to not get engaged on yourself. So you kind of just sort of stalk the enemy team from the side, and you just kind of either do it out of vision, or even if they're watching, it always just creates pressure that at any moment you could jump in. You don't really play Muradin at the front like most tanks. If you play him effectively, you're kind of just constantly flanking and just playing on the side of the fight. And doing that with Haymaker is a lot more scary, because, and if you have the jump slow, if the enemy ever steps forward post level 16 when you have the jump range, if you can get onto either their healer so that they don't have a cleanse, or when their cleanse is down if they have one, otherwise you basically just, you can kind of animation cancel the Haymaker by just jumping on the back, like on the back of their head, and then immediately Haymakering. There's pretty much no animation. The animation is really quick, so it's pretty hard to interrupt it. So yeah, I would say the main things are just playing on the flank and not being afraid to just jump in with your E to get the slow, and then immediately Haymaker to animation cancel it.
So Dwarf Launch has a 37% win rate, 72% popularity at 16, but they're not comboing the Haymaker or the Heavy Impact with it. And that together is what kind of makes that machine you're talking about.
Yeah, and a lot of pretty much... like almost all the Muradins go either Skullcracker or give them the axe at 7, because that combos with Avatar just living in the enemy backline and doing damage. But I think that with how strong the supports are right now, none of them really care if a Muradin is just living in their backline. They can pretty easily heal through just a Muradin's damage. So I don't think that playstyle really works anymore in the current meta. I think it's a lot more effective to just get the displacement from the Avatar and just be constantly pressuring anyone who kind of, any stragglers who sort of stray a little bit too far from their team in the fight. And you don't really need the damage talent at level 7 if you have the jump slow, because the 13, the fire damage, does increase damage if you hit your storm bolt. So you can just set up your own storm bolt with the jump slow, and unless they have a dash or something, there's no way to dodge it. So you end up doing more damage anyways, I think, just by reliably hitting every single storm bolt off of the slow from your jump, because the fire at 13 procs up when you hit the Q.
Oh, that's true. Oh, that's a great combo.
Yeah. People should take it more.
That is very aggressive.
Yeah, I found you would think that you wouldn't have the damage to kind of just solo backliners with it, but I found that it feels like I do the same damage, honestly, from just being able to keep them in range with the slow. And the slow also gives you more time to auto attack to get the cooldown reduction on your storm bolt that is just built in at level 10 now. So I found if there's a squishy ranged post level 16 all by themselves, there's pretty much no escaping the Muradin with this build. You just jump on their heads and get the E cooldown reduction and then start slapping them and stunning them up pretty much permanently. They can't really go anywhere. They just slowly burn.
Got to learn how to aim haymaker is what I'm writing it down today.
Well, that's the 80% slow. Like that's what makes it so easy is you got to hit your jump then. And I think jump is programmed like Tyrael's sword, where it'll jump regardless of where you put the location. So, which is good if you know how long it is, but it's really frustrating you're first learning Muradin because you're like, please Muradin, go to this location and then jump here exactly where I told you to. He's like, you said jump that direction. I'm going right now.
Yeah, it'll just go max distance from wherever you currently are, essentially.
Right.
Figure it out. Yeah, that part of Muradin. It's part of learning him.
The only other thing with the haymaker is you definitely need to be a little bit more patient with it. If you can use it just to peel yourself if you ever think you're in danger, which is why I don't think the avatar is even really better for surviving, because you're usually dying to chain CC. But typically I'm on the flank. As soon as I hit a storm bolt, just kind of fishing for storm bolts, if nothing's really happening, the second the storm bolt hits, you just jump in and haymaker them, and then they can't use any mobility or react to it in any way.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about it in conjunction with the storm bolt fishing, like you just mentioned. Huh. Very cool. We've got another question here from Crushinator, who wants to know what was the most pleasantly surprising thing about the job of casting for CCL?
I think just being able to watch all the games, and because that's something that I've probably watched more games as the analyst than I did watch VOD reviews ever in like my whole HOTS career. VOD reviews are kind of, well, okay, that's not true. Of like actual VOD reviews where you're like analyzing the games, I'd say my favorite part of being a pro player was watching the VODs when my team won. And my least favorite part of being a pro player was watching the VODs when my team lost. So a lot of the time, unless I watched them with my team, I wouldn't really watch the losing games. You know, if I'm celebrating and watching my games back and we're 3-1 in the series, I just kind of don't watch that loss if my team's doing good in general. But being able to kind of see the game and take notes on every single game has really given me a lot more perspective on what the other roles are doing, and kind of just it's given me a bit more, like, I don't think empathy is the right word, but for you know, feeling, it's given me more perspective of, you know, how the supports feel and how the ranged feel and how the offlaner feels and what kind of makes them effective. Because I'm not playing from the perspective of the tank. I'm just watching everything unfold at the same time.
I get sympathetic for heroes I like playing. Like, Kyle, you and I were talking about this off air. The very first game of 30K... It was the first game of the playoffs. 30K versus
Storm.
So yeah, I love Brightwing, and that first damn game, I was just watching Brightwing like, yeah, BBJ, I don't want to be in your position because I don't know who to polymorph, because you polymorphed the Diablo and Hanzo just stood his ground and delivered a stupid amount of damage, or he polymorphed the damage and Diablo just ran amok. And I was just sitting there like I was sweating on behalf of BBJ's Brightwing.
Yeah, you definitely notice a lot of things as a spectator that you don't notice as a player.
Yeah, it's an interesting watch for sure. Misfit wrote in and said, if the orb change was ever reverted, it probably won't, but humor me, would you consider going back to playing competitive HOTS, or are you happy enough where you are to stay on the casting side?
Is this a big question? Why is there history here?
It reads right here, follows it up with, this could lead to a discussion on his opinion of the experience orb's impact on competitive. So it does seem like it's a little bit of a bait question.
I'm guessing this is from my personal stream, kind of giving some my distaste for the XP changes that they put into the game. If it were up to me, I would revert the XP changes for everything but Quick Match. I think for Quick Match, all the XP changes are fine, and that's kind of like what it seemed like they were going towards, because all the pro players gave Blizzard feedback at the end of HTC. Before HTC got canceled, they put out all the XP changes, and then they asked us all to give them feedback, and then they canceled the HTC. So it seemed like they kind of used us at the end for feedback, which we gave them, and the feedback was fairly unanimous that all the pro players hated it, and they kind of just went along with it anyways. And I understand why they would do it if they're trying to, if they knew that they were downsizing and that they weren't going to have as many people working on the game. It's a lot harder to balance things when something can be too strong and can swing every game into a 3 or 4 level lead, which is what it used to do. So I kind of understand why they did it. They wanted everything to be a little bit more casual friendly. So if you go into Quick Match and you're playing against a team comp that is super like good, and you got like 5 Murkies, that you still have a chance because of the XP changes. But I would just revert the XP changes for everything but Quick Match, and I think that would be fine, and I think everyone in ranked would kind of prefer that as well. That's not the main reason that I took on the analyst position, though. I think it's more just sort of self-development and just trying something new. So no, I wouldn't come back to playing if they reverted the XP gloves. It is tempting, because I mean, playing the game is fun, but something else is, if I play the game, I really want to dedicate like 100% of my time to it in the same way that I did in the HGC. So who knows, maybe if in 2 to 3 years from now the Bill Gates Super League comes out and it's, you know, even bigger than the HGC was, then I could see myself going back and playing. But where it stands right now, it's just I can't stop myself from getting just too absorbed in it, where it just takes up 100% of my time when I'm playing. So, you know, playing, doing draft theory, stuff like that. And so I just wouldn't be able to do that right now. But who knows, maybe someday.
I'm trying to remember my HOTS change history, but did they mention the orbs to you? Because I thought the change that happened shortly after 2018's BlizzCon, which would have been, you know, right before the news about HGC, that was trickle XP, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the forts giving the trickle XP and the catapults being attached to the forts. And I think that was when they put all the comeback XP in place. And I think that was also when they made it so that towers and forts just gave like significantly less XP than before. It used to be, if you got a tower early, that was a big deal for the XP. That was like a fourth of a level. Whereas now, if you get a tower early, it doesn't really impact the game's XP, and also the comeback XP. So yeah, the XP globes weren't the HGC change, but I was kind of just lumping that all together, because the XP globes don't change a whole lot. They mostly just change that wave clear is not as important as it used to be, because if you miss a wave, you can still get some of it back. But in general, I don't think the XP globes are that huge of a deal. The XP changes that they put in at the end of 2018 are definitely a much bigger deal.
You're now making me want like classic HOTS, like I want them to snapshot different metas and rotate through, like, for the next 3 months, we're going to be on the 2018 balance build.
I mean, where would you want to go?
No, that's why you rotate it. I don't want to be stuck anywhere, but I kind of want to revisit some of the old stuff. I mean, bring me back to the tower ammo, dude. I miss old Zagara.
Okay. Oh, not executioner. What was it? Demolitionist?
Yes. Was that destroyed the one that ammo consumed and auto attacks? Ammo?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good talent. Yeah, I miss it. I honestly miss the tower ammo too, just because it actually punished the enemy team for not drafting enough wave clear. And then like that comboed with the XP changes, comboed with the XP globes, wave clear is just a lot less important. So it does feel like most games just come down to level 20 fights now.
You're making me nostalgic.
That was one of my my edgy phase of tweets, by the way. When I could tell the HGC was coming down a bit, that was one of my tweets. Was like, people are lined up in the year is 2050, and people are lined up excited to try HOTS Classic. I think that's what the tweet was. It was after they announced they were releasing WoW Classic.
Oh my god. it's a great dunk, but also kind of want it. At least the option to go back. You know, they had a classic to Hearthstone too, and I've been wanting them to kind of cycle through different metas there, because they just kind of, and they've been saying they're gonna up it, but it's just been stuck at vanilla Hearthstone since they launched it. And I'm just like, all right, can we? And they've been talking about, like, they're just going to start adding expansions. I'm like, that's cool. But then can you also take them away and go back to older ones? And don't, we're just on the same track otherwise as we currently are, just on a delay. So I don't know. There's part of me.
What you're talking about is like a time walking.
A little bit.
Which what we need is not World of Warcraft. We need Final Fantasy 14. We need to make every player go through the old patch content and level up through it. So they have, when you start the game, when you join, you have to play through X number of quick matches.
I don't know about
with
that.
Tower ammo. And then the heroes slowly get added in, you know, and then eventually Master Chief and Clippy and all them, you know, end up in the game.
I don't know about that one, Kyle. I think we're taking it too far. I think Storm League do like meta seasons. Like every 3 months, like we're going to a different snapshotted meta. Like,
Hammond, the Overwatch ball. He was my favorite when I was playing Overwatch. The hamster in the ball that rolls around. I want him. If he was a main tank, that would be so much fun. That's the one I want.
I stopped playing Overwatch by that point, but yeah, thank you for reminding me.
Yeah, it was a one trick. My teammates didn't like it because they didn't understand what I was doing. But
like barreling around into people, fun time. Like feels a little so satisfying to me. I guess,
yeah.
Or honestly, Chen too, because Chen with the barrel and the displacement, and
yeah, it's like a barrel that you can swing around walls and do all kinds of cool techs with. You can like double bounce and triple bounce people. There's like a lot of cool tech to ball. I think if he was added to HOTS, it would be fun.
Being able to swing on terrain, that's just what I need. Another terrain exploiting Overwatch hero.
Yeah,
that's rad. And then from the chat, the Apocalypse Shovel wanted to know who you would put on a CCL All-Star team.
That's tough. There's definitely quite a few standout players. A lot of them would probably come from 30K anyways. I think Dino is kind of ridiculous. Unranged, it looks like he just outclasses his opponents every single game, and he makes it flashy too. So I definitely have to take Dino. The tank I would be a little bit more torn on. I think I'd be between Tremor, Lauber, and Bad Benny for the tank position. It'd be kind of tough to choose. Support would also be hard to choose. I would take either BBJ or Valimar. Even though Diamond Hands didn't do so hot, I think Valimar is just a standout player, and his team is a little bit more new. So I think he's just on a slightly weaker roster, so you can't really see it.
It's a team game, right? Like, you can still stand out even if you don't. Maybe your team doesn't have the highest win rate.
Yeah.
Hang on. I want to make sure I get this. Yeah, Valimar's that insane Lucio. Absolutely nuts.
Yeah, Valimar's pretty nuts. So we'll just take Valimar. So I'd say Valimar, Dino. I would just pull in Mason Blaze and put him on flex, because even though he's kind of like the opposite of Dino, where he's not super flashy, but I think him and Ivy Tings both are kind of in the same category where neither one of them is flashy, but they're both playing like nearly perfectly most of the time, just pumping out damage. So say Dino. It's hard to choose a tank. So Dino, Valimar, Mason Blaze, either Tremor, Bad Benny, or Lauber, and then it's got to be Liam for the offlane. Liam has the infamous killing everybody clips and stuff like that on the URL, and yeah, Liam's just pretty nuts.
You got through that pretty quickly.
That was well done.
That encyclopedic memory coming into play.
Yeah. Unfortunately only useful for HOTS encyclopedic memory.
Now do it if it was a Muppet movie. Who would be the one human on the team? Or you can pick Space Jam if you'd prefer.
Wait, what?
I Have you seen the meme going around where you take your pick a movie, one actor stays as a human and everyone else gets replaced with a Muppet? That's the meme.
No, I haven't seen that.
Yeah. See, this is my this is unfair to Bahamut, because if you have a beard, I think it's really easy to picture someone as a Muppet. And so I immediately have a Muppet Bahamut in my head.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yep. Well, thanks for the questions, everybody. Keep them coming. itncast@gmail.com, or drop us a message right there in our Discord. Skip the inbox entirely. But I think that's going to bring us to the end of this episode. Thanks again to our patrons supporting us over at patreon.com/ITN. Huge thanks to Declan H, Sean B, and Mike R, our Patreon producers. Got two slots left. It's been a while since we've had an opening for producers, so if you want to become one, check out the Patreon. We are typically live Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern right here on twitch.tv/amovetv, or you can follow the show on Twitter @ITNcast. Before we go around the table, where can everybody find you? We'll start with this week's guest, Just Thing. Other than at the caster table this weekend for the CCL finals, everybody, you better watch. Where can everyone find you?
You can find me on Twitter at thisjustthing, and same, my Twitch and Twitter tag is thisjustthing. So you can find me on Twitter rarely, and even more rarely on Twitch, but I stream semi-annually, so you might be able to catch one of my rare Justing streams there.
Awesome. And again, this weekend, twitch.tv/heroeshearth. Do not miss the CCL season 3 finals. It's a hell of a tournament. Everyone go out there and support it. It's been great. Justin, thanks again for joining us, dude. Really appreciate your time.
Yep, thanks for having me. It's been fun. It's been good.
Kyle, before we go, what about you, dude? You do more than just Into the Nexus.
I do. I do all sorts of things, like Grinding Gear, the Final Fantasy 14 show you should check out. I do DM Gives Inspiration, the Learn to Play 5th Edition D&D show you should check out. But this week, let's talk about some heroes, because the team is together, and each Wednesday night there will be a match over at twitch.tv/KyleFerguson for the NGS, or a practice going on over there. So join me on support, Mockery on assassin, Porky on assassin, Cavalier Guest on offlane, and Crushinator on main tank, as well as other subs you may know from the Heroes of the Storm community.
Sorry, I'm just defending myself to Bahamut. I wasn't saying you look like a Muppet. I'm just saying when I see a beard, I can picture someone as a Muppet. Folks, I'm Garrett Art on Twitter. Find me on there. This podcast and every single other one that I produce can be found at amove.tv. But again, I really, really want to promote Kyle and myself with our first ever true YouTube project. We are documenting our first ever playthrough of Final Fantasy 14 as we slowly chew through it. And you can find that at youtube.com/amovetv. The series is called Grinding Gear, and we just made it to Heavensward. We made it to our first expansion. We got through what everyone says is the boring bit. Well, some people. Other people are like, what's wrong with ARR? I like it. But anyway, youtube.com/amovetv. That's going to wrap it for this episode of Into the Nexus. We'll see you next week. But until then, everybody, good luck and have fun.
Take care.